sort of, I mean, there's some surprise, and then it's, how does that work? And they often really have, people have a hard time wrapping their minds around around what that would look like, or, mm-hmm. or how it can be comfortable. And in and I understand that, because when you're looking at it from the outside, it does seem like, well, how would that go down, and how would you set that up? Mm-hmm. And in reality, I think it just happens a lot more organically than that often.
And I guess my question is, for people who have had those fantasies, did you talk about that with your partner beforehand? Wouldn't that be, that'd be neat if, or just having, just in terms of a sexual play within the bedroom before that, or not have those conversations?
You know, I don't think we did. I don't think we did. So it was sort of, mm-hmm. sort of out of left field. It kind of came out of nowhere. And yet felt like, It was just so natural. It was, mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't you do this? Why haven't we been doing this forever?
And from there, moving forward, moving and getting involved with other people, how, like, do you have conversations beforehand, or how do they learn the rules, I guess, is probably the best way.
I think. That again, especially if you're all in the same room, that there does come to sort of be a group consensus, just unspoken. If you're not comfortable with something, I mean, you're there with people that you're friendly with anyway, and so that's been my experience. I'm just speaking from my experience, but when you're in a room with your friends, basically, mm-hmm. If something's not feeling comfortable for you, you move away from it, and I think that becomes obvious, and then. People just don't go there anymore, right?
Yeah. So in other words, you've got people, and you use the word friend, which I think is important, where I think of friends as people that you've already got a relationship with, where there's trust. Mm-hmm. It's already a safe space, so it helps co-create that space with the other people that are there, mm-hmm. as opposed to, okay, this is okay, this isn't okay, and trying to basically try and maneuver through a polite sexual society.
Mm-hmm. And even when they're not our, you know, our people that we know well, I don't think, in my experience, it's always been people that are friends of friends, or we're in a social situation together, sort of for the evening anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, again, there's just that lead up, that build up where you do a bit that of that social dance, like you would if you were
meeting
single,
anywhere.
You know, so you negotiate that, and I feel like it's just an extension of that negotiation. It's not, it doesn't necessarily look like a whole new negotiation. And I've also been really surprised at when I do share with people, or when we start to flirt, or when there starts to seem like there might be that interest, I've been shocked at how many people are not shocked by the concept that we might play together, or that, you know, that I'm in a non-monogamous relationship, or and so, you know, most of my friends who are in couples are not monogamous at this point. I'm in a place where I have at least as many friends in couples who are non-monogamous than who are, and so I've had this like societal shift for me in my relationships where that's often on the table, and that doesn't mean that anything will necessarily happen just because you're out with people, but that there's that possibility there.
So I guess with that, because there's a lot of people who would love to open up their relationships, they put ads on Craigslist or you know, one of the online sites, and really aren't really sure how to go about it and really get stuck. And I guess my question is, how do you not get stuck? How do you unstick yourself and just kind of jump right in?
I think to some extent, you just got to let go of, you know, trust yourself in the process and trust your partner in the process, especially, you know, if you have decided that this is something that you're entering in together, and it doesn't have to look like any specific thing, right? I mean, you can go, you can sort of dabble. You can enter, stick your toe in that in the water.
Literally and figuratively.
you can go to a sexy party where you think, you know, there might be that potential, and just see how it goes. And maybe nothing happens. And you know, I think if you're okay with that too, then you can sort of see how things develop and whether or not it's a fit for you, and mm-hmm. and you can leave. I mean, you know, there's no, you're it's not like you signed some contract and
you're gonna have sex with everybody. Literally, put my keys here, come to the room, you can have sex with me regardless.
Exactly. I think that there's this sense that there's all this pressure, and it's like, if I reveal that I'm interested in this, that, you know, that then I've signed myself up for.
So there's an expectation where you have to have sex, even if it's non-consensual, is what the misconception is?
I don't know that even like if it's almost obligated, non-consensual, but yes, that there's some pressure to, you know, if I've thrown my hat in the ring, I should
perform
something. And I don't know, in my experience, that's just not there. Mm-hmm. Like everyone is fine with you staying or you leaving, mm-hmm. or, you know, doing what you're comfortable with and not doing what you're not comfortable with. And again, that's with my friends. And mm-hmm. and so I imagine if you are entering into situations with people that you don't know, that it might be different, because you can run into some mm-hmm. people who are not respectful of your boundaries and who are not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I understand where you're going on that, and especially in this day and age where 1 out of 3 women have dealt with sexual violence, 1 out of 6 men. So sometimes people aren't always respectful for boundaries. So I think knowing your own personal boundaries is really key, but also opening up, so don't overthink things, to give yourself a chance to play. And I think play is a really great word to use, to experiment. You mentioned sex parties. Did you want to share about that? Like, how do you find out about places? Like, I've heard rumors about Club Eden before, etc., but don't really know a lot about where you find out where to connect with other people, where it is a safe space, where you don't have, like, you know, webcams or something, where you're going to end up on the internet somewhere else. Sorry, I'm going with every misconception out there.
So. Oh, man, all these things that I just don't even... I'm so not paranoid about it. These things. I don't know. I mean, again, it happened. I didn't seek this out, and so when I say sort of sexy parties, it's all happened for me through organic happening and then word mm-hmm. of mouth. And I think I probably have a sort of particular kind of group of friends too, so it might not be as easy for everyone to hear through word of mouth. But I mean, I'm also a really open person, and I don't have a lot of boundaries around talking about this kind of stuff. I think that we would benefit as a society from being more open about issues around sex. And so I talk about it. And then when I say, oh, hey, you know, this is something that happened, people are either curious about it and sometimes want to try it out themselves, or they say, oh yeah, we do that. and then you get invited to a party at their house, and then you kind of figure that something might happen, right? I mean, again, I think it's like, oh, I think back to my single days, and, you know, when you meet somebody in a coffee shop and you have a bit of a spark, and then they invite you to their birthday party, you think, you know, something could might happen. Come here, and I'm going to put my enough of intention out on the table that
something may literally come back to you.
Exactly. So I'm afraid I don't have a lot of advice for, you know, how to find a sexy party. But make your own.
Yeah, and Club Eden, I think, is a really, really good one to start with as well. For those listeners out there that may be interested in even want to go, best go as a couple, or if you're in a relationship, or single women are available. Guys, I'm sorry. As from my understanding, you do need to go with the female. Is that true?
Like,
you believe so?
I think that you need to be with mm-hmm. somebody, with a member. Yeah.
If somebody was throwing a sexy party, are there any thoughts like, and I'm so sorry I keep wearing the word roles when we're talking about play, but almost, I always think of in terms of getting a chance to play where you almost set up stuff so then things are safe. Like, I imagine perhaps like some of the tips that you'd want to do as a hostess are perhaps having things like condoms, both female as well as male, dental dams, like anything that's there, so it makes it really gentle and really simple and casual, mm-hmm. almost the way you'd have a candy bowl out. So
exactly, that is really, I think, the feel of it is just, again, you know, you might partake or you might not, and it's there, and again, making it comfortable. It's like having a guest amenities basket in your bathroom, right? I mean, I think that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah. We're going to take a really quick short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a lot more with Ms. Scarlett A. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
$1 billion on the ground, all stretched out and uncurled, would extend about 4 times around the circumference of the world.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Commercial Drive area at
Bone Rattle Music Limited, High Life Records, and People's Co-op Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca. Tuesday, May 28th at Fortune Sound Club, it's the Sweatshop Union Infinite LP release party and live performance with guests Def 3, Ray Black, and Pigeonhole.
To those working in banks and armed service ranks, to all the children born and raised in internment camps.
Sweatshop Union are heavyweights of Northwestern hip-hop and have earned a reputation as the hardest-working collective in the region. Tickets on sale at High Life, Zulu, Dipped, Red Cat, and Beat Street. Sponsored by 101.9 FM, CITR.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Back in Sexy in Van City Radio and 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you're just joining us, we are talking about healthy sexuality, healthy relational sex, sex, sex. Tonight is a total sex show, which is quite lovely. And talking about group sex, talking about getting a chance to play and creating that safe space. So if you and your partner are interested in having an opportunity to play with others and having a non-monogamous relationship, I almost don't like the word non. I almost want to say almost an all-inclusive relationship where it's almost like going to an all-inclusive resort where you kind of get to try whatever's on the buffet table. And if you're just joining us now, I'm talking to Scarlett A, which I'm very excited to have her on the show.
Thank you very much. I really like that,
buffet.
Instead of taking non-monogamy, which sounds so negative, because it really is, it's not for everybody,
mm-hmm.
but I think that it can really bring extra dimension into a relationship instead of closing something off or being a negative, so taking something away.
I'm just trying to visualize in terms of hosting the perfect party. So before the break, I was mentioning like the bowl of condoms, making sure that safe sex is almost like an expectation as opposed to a non-expectation. And I was just thinking in terms of what would I want to do if I was a hostess personally. So I think probably having some toys where making sure that they're used very safely, and having some discussion about that if you're using it with somebody, using condoms, being really careful, as well as possibly having just different types of lubricant, etc. Just having a discussion with somebody, making sure you're not doing something like, say, using peanut oil or something like that with just certain types of allergies. Making sure you have those kinds of conversations, and maybe different types of massage oil, etc. Lots of pillows, perhaps some stuff that can be put down so you don't destroy the sheets if you are using lots of lube, etc. So what you'd want to have for your own bedroom, etc. Making sure everybody feels safe and comfy. What are some of the things that might have surprised you that you didn't expect, besides the fact it started organically, which is super cool, and more people than you probably imagined beforehand are more open to the idea of how do we describe it, about open monogamy, or I don't know what the word is.
How do you describe it?
Besides being a buffet, and I just like the all-inclusive.
I don't know how to describe it. I like the buffet. What was surprising? I guess maybe the number of people in one room at a time engaging in this.
Of course, I want to hear a full picture now, because it's just like, are we talking like hundreds of people, or are we talking 10? I'm trying to visualize how you get all those people in there, unless you're like renting Rogers Arena.
that would require a lot of setup, which is contrary to my more organic leanings. But I don't know. In my moments of considering such things before engaging in it, I sort of thought about, you know, I thought about threesomes, bringing home another partner into the bedroom, or potentially you know, couple swapping or something like that. And I guess I was surprised that it somehow, I guess we ended up, when I tell people sort of how it happened, they're like, so orgies? And I think it's so funny, because that's just so not, I don't know, I have a mental image of what an orgy is, and it's not
what your mental image of an orgy
I do. Again, this sort of like dark
porno type of thing.
Bunch of writhing bodies, and it's somehow like dark and sort of not sinister isn't the right word, but sort of that dark, sexy, like serious sexy. When it's really just a lot. I guess the biggest thing that has surprised me actually is the laughter in the room. How it's just about laughing and having a good time, and it's not this serious thing that you set out to do.
In terms of being able to play and having a safe space, especially when other people come into it, how has it changed your relationship? Like, if you feel comfortable sharing, and just perhaps some of the people in the circle as well, that you've gotten to know, just how it's changed in different levels.
I mean, I think it changes everybody's relationship a bit differently. So I've heard reports from other people of that, you know, it's caused an issue at certain points in time, where one person feels jealous, or and not necessarily specifically about the sex, but more about the
emotional intimacy,
the relationship that goes around it. I mean, in speaking with the couples that I have talked to about that issue specifically, because that hasn't been an issue in my relationship, I don't think. As they work through that, they feel that their relationships get stronger, and that they have a more intimate understanding of each other, and what they can do to please each other, I would say that for me personally, it has, I think my relationship got kind of serious. And this, I keep talking about how it's playful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I mean, that's another way that it can affect your relationship, is to bring in some element that you had sort of lost or forgotten about in mm-hmm. your relationship. And it's not that you're now going and getting that elsewhere outside of your relationship. It's that it, by being reminded of these sort of lost parts of yourself, that they become part of you again, and they become part of your relationship.
And one of the examples you mentioned in pre-show chat was one partner primping and getting ready, because it's like going on a date, mm-hmm. essentially. And that sometimes, especially when we get in relationships, and serial monogamy, essentially, where, yeah, especially if it's a long-term relationship, where things get into bed death, where we don't do those things. We don't dress up. We don't put lipstick on when our partners come through the door, mm-hmm. or, you know, primp up. Making sure that we're, you know, as my partner would describe it, as manscaping down below, etc. And just putting on cologne, maybe making sure a nice fresh shave for a guy, you know, all those wonderful things where it feels extra sexy.
And so, I mean, that can cause problems, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're doing all of those things when you haven't been doing them, then that can cause some jealousy and some tension for sure.
Okay.
But at the same time, it can be a reinvigoration as well.
Mm-hmm. It's almost re-seeing your partner, because you get used to seeing them every day,
mm-hmm.
and being able to see them more. It's like, that's who I fell in love with, even though you love them. And there's that wonderful contentness that comes from a relationship that's long-term, a healthy one, that it's kind of nice where it's like, ooh, okay, yes, you're totally hot and sexy, and wow, you're really good looking, actually.
And that's where I was actually going to go next, was that I think that it can really remind you about the people that you were when you fell in love. Mm. When you fell for each other, when you were doing that dance, it reminds you of those qualities of that person that maybe you've lost sight of along the way, or that they don't have as much anymore, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're not, you haven't been exercising those qualities. And so that person that you fell in love with is more present in your relationship. Again, this isn't a prescription for everybody, but it's something that I think can happen.
Mm-hmm.
That is maybe an unintended but really lovely mm-hmm. consequence of engaging in play with other people.
And I want to add something to that for listeners who are listening out there, that in terms of if your relationship's on the rocks, that I wouldn't encourage it personally. And each relationship's different, but I almost think of it as almost as making a decision to have children to try and save the marriage. I think that can be it's going to either make or break. It's not necessarily the best thing if there isn't that healthy communication and love and friendship beforehand, mm-hmm. before opening things up.
Yeah, I think that it can be pretty detrimental to your relationship if you're not solid. Mm-hmm. It can also make for some pretty awkward situations, I think, if you're, especially, you know, and it can affect your relationships with your friends. Mm-hmm. If you are engaging with people that you know, with your friends,
yes.
You don't necessarily, I mean, aside, of course, the main concern is your mm-hmm. Your main loving relationship, but, I mean, it can also be pretty hard for other people to be in the room with you if that's going on. So
yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because a few weeks ago we had the sex researcher who's doing a researcher about our research project on sexuality and safety in regards to the sex trade. And that was one of the things he brought up that's just not really up there. And for those of you who are interested, he's doing a study about the Johns right now and who's purchasing sex, because a lot of the laws in terms of the Bedford case are being based on a lot of the street prostitution, not the full picture, not including the LGBTQ community, not including a lot of couples, because a lot of couples sometimes, because of that very thing where they may not want to go there with their friends because they're fearful as to, because I think it is, it's the big unknown. What if, what if, what if? So sometimes couples will purchase sex because in that way it is a transaction and that's their choice, and have that conception that it keeps the jealousy piece out, which I hadn't really thought of that before. But he mentioned that in the research, which I thought was interesting in terms of who's purchasing.
And that's, sorry, not to, that's a really interesting direction, but it spurred something for me, which is that people say to me, well, if you're engaging with your friends in this, what happens, like, don't things get awkward? What happens if you, it makes it more complicated, and what happens if something happens that's awkward, and, you know, how do you mend the relationship with that or
with the friends,
mm-hmm. or not have that continue to be awkward. And I think it strikes me as kind of a funny question, because to me it's like, well, what do you do in any other circumstance where there's been something awkward with a friend? If you've you know, left a friend out a little bit, you know, there's three of you out and two of you are chatting more and somebody has their feelings hurt, how do you mend that? And not that, you know, bringing in another dimension doesn't make it that much more complicated, but I think that if you've got some transgressions that happen, mm-hmm. in that when you're hanging out with your friends and you're having some sexual play, that you would deal with that in the same way that you would mend fences or mend relationships if
so by having communication, mm-hmm. Figuring out what's going on and talking about it,
mm-hmm.
and seeing if you can come to an understanding, and if need be, apologizing if that needs to happen.
And I like it, having it within friends, because you're not it's way less risky, it's more, I mean, it's safe emotionally, physically, all of those things, you know, better for society in general if we're engaging with people that I feel when I'm engaging with people that, mm-hmm. that I know and that I'm friends with,
mm-hmm.
I'm not in as much danger of you know, having my boundaries disrespect or, you know, not paid attention to, or, you know, we're not going to be going, my partner and I aren't going to be going and soliciting sex from a prostitute, right? So it is safer and more loving and
I guess that's going to be my next question, is how do you guarantee, because say somebody has an STI and they haven't disclosed that, in terms of the friendship, like, is that conversation come up, or are you using condoms, like both female condoms instead, like those types of things, to make sure, just to, so in case somebody doesn't disclose, because I could see that definitely rupturing, especially if somebody transmitted a sexually transmitted disease.
Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, I think that would definitely be an issue, as it would be with,
mm-hmm. anyone. I just thought, because in terms of the friendship piece, because there's almost that trust where it's, even though some STIs, you see there's no symptoms for certain ones, and sometimes can be transmitted, and then it's like, oh, wow.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I think it would certainly cause a rift if there was a known STI and, mm-hmm. and the person didn't disclose. I think that it's everybody's responsibility to make sure that you're being safe.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that anybody that I was friends with would mm-hmm. tell me if they knew.
Yeah.
But also it is my responsibility, because who knows if they'll know, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's my responsibility to make sure that I'm keeping myself safe.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what else I was going to say about that.
So I was going to add to that as well, any recommendations, especially if it's friends of friends, because even though we want to trust everybody and you've been have some really wonderful experiences, any guidance in terms of, and I'm thinking of things like GHB, etc., where perhaps somebody who may not know someone as well, but maybe a friend of somebody else who they have a great relationship, but they're basically a virtual stranger, even if they're in the circle. Just being respectful and being able to set up some parameters to keep ourselves safe and our partners safe in terms of date rape, drugs, etc.
I mean, I think that if everyone's in your home, or if you're all in a friend's home, again, I guess I just don't see it as being very different from setting up rules for conduct, mm-hmm. kind of in general at a party, right? So,
in that case, what rules would you have for a party? Let's reframe the question.
I would not be, I wouldn't be I think basically as long as everybody knows what's going on, mm-hmm. and everybody is okay with it, then that's great. It's really about sort of informed consent or mm-hmm. full disclosure on issues. And so whatever everybody's comfortable with, I mean, if even not going into anything illegal, into illegal drugs, but alcohol, right? I mean, if
somebody passes out or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like alcohol isn't dangerous.
No. It's more dangerous than we think sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And so if somebody's passed out, that is obviously not.
No go.
That person needs to be in a safe space by themselves and sleep, probably, or checked on and whatever. They need to be dealt with in some other way. They need to not be part of that party anymore, mm-hmm. right? And if everybody is okay with everybody drinking, then that's great. But, I mean, if there's somebody who really doesn't want there to be a lot of alcohol mm-hmm. involved, then either they need to not be there, or if everybody else is okay with, you know, with that being a sort of a constraint put mm-hmm. around the party, then great.
Is there discussion about, like, beforehand? Because I know I've mentioned toys. We've talked about just making sure for safe sex, disclosing in terms of any STIs, etc., and being respectful for everybody who's there, having conversations with a partner, especially if somebody starts to get jealous, etc., and making sure that communication goes, as well as doing follow-up with friends if something's not comfortable, if it didn't feel right. What do you ever discuss things beforehand? So maybe this is a theme party where this is going to be where there's play like spanking, and maybe a schoolgirl party or something like that, where you can kind of play like that versus blood play, or just in terms of body fluids as an example. And I don't mean you personally, but I just mean in general, any guidance in regards to having those conversations beforehand, like maybe asking your hostess, okay, is this something that people do, or...
I mean, aside from parties, I know some couples who've had lengthy discussions before their first experience, before every experience that they have, where they will talk to each other and the other, whatever other parties mm-hmm. they're inviting into their experience, about very explicitly about what are our rules, what. Does anyone have an STI that they know of? You know, when is this going to happen? How is this going to happen? Mm-hmm. So there are certainly people who I think that allows them to play more because mm-hmm. they know the boundaries.
What's expected. It's kind of like they know what the sexual etiquette is.
Mm-hmm. And then there are other couples who don't do that sort of pre-planning piece, and they take it as it goes, and I mean especially if you have friends that are already doing this, then mm-hmm. to some extent I think you probably learn from them and you follow along and you do what they do, and you aren't likely to step outside of the boundaries that they kind of mm-hmm. put out there, even if they're not explicitly stated. Again, I think most of the time you can tell from people mm-hmm. moving away from you a bit if you're sort of emotionally sensitive or
yeah
socially sensitive, right?
One of the things you mentioned earlier was about the almost emotional cheat, where sometimes there's a physicality, where a lot of times people discuss that at length, like, okay, you can have oral sex, but you can't have intercourse, and setting up parameters like that, or you can lick, waist up is totally okay, or if you're spanking, that's fine, but no anal, like all that kind of stuff, and no double penetration. Having those discussions, but sometimes they don't talk about the emotional effects. And I didn't know if you wanted to elaborate on that, because that was something we talked about in our pre-show chat.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a strange kind of discussion. Not strange discussion, but it's a topic or a thought that's often occurred to me, even outside mm-hmm. of talking about non-monogamous relationships or buffet relationships. because, you know, even if you're in a fully monogamous relationship and, you know, you have different needs met by different people, and your partner isn't going to be all things to you. And I think I've often thought, you know, sex isn't what my partner should be. You know, if there's something that my partner should maybe be concerned about, it's mm-hmm. the emotional connection that I have with this person that I've never slept with. I've never had any sexual contact with this person, but I've got a crazy emotional connection with them. And as a partner, I would be more concerned about
the emotional cheat or potential cheat.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. We're going to keep chatting about this in a moment. We're going to take a really quick short break. You've been listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back.
$1 billion on the ground, all stretched out and uncurled, would extend about four times around the circumference of the world.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, RX Comics, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, Temple of the Modern Girl Boutique, the Wallflower Modern Diner, and Woo Vintage Clothing.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or online at citr.ca.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Back in Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And we've got a caller, which is really exciting. This is Patrick, who is wanted to share his first sexual experience, which sounds very intriguing because it was with nine people under a tree at English Bay, which sounds pretty hot. Patrick, can you hear us?
Where is it?
I think he is stepped away from everything. Hello, Patrick. Are you there?
I am.
Wonderful.
Sorry.
That's all right. So, Scarlett A and I would love to hear what you have to say, and I'm glad. Thank you for calling in and sharing your experience.
I have feedback. There we go. And distortion because of my volume level. Now, can you pose me a question?
Sure. Why don't you speak to us in regards to about group sex? You mentioned your first experience was with 9 people at English Bay, and you wanted to share an experience with us.
Well, I think the crazy thing about group sex is that most people are afraid. Most people abscond. They want themselves to enjoy or be fulfilled in a way.
Okay.
And so group sex, I think, is really frightening for most people. And I think what's really crazy is that my first experience sexually as a 19-year-old male was, unfortunately, oral sex. I mean, I had never touched a man, let alone a woman. And to find a comfortable spot, okay? And what was basically what happened was just an experience between one person and another person, but unfortunately public, right? It's open. And so things can change and things can happen to expand the experience beyond one or two persons. And so thus, you know, the one person became 3 people. And the 3 people became 9 people. And I had counseling at some point in regards to a sexual addiction, because this kind of leaped forward. Basically, it just opened a lot of doors to say, everything's okay if I'm okay. And that's basically what the counseling backed up.
Mm-hmm.
It was the acceptance. If I accept what I want and I'm okay with what I want, then it's okay. Doesn't matter if it's one person or 3 people or 9 people. So I think there's a stigma based on the individual with group sex. I think most people are scared to share themselves with one person, let alone 9 people. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do. I just wanted to ask, because one of the things you mentioned was you described it as unfortunately, and you mentioned that word a couple times in there. And after the counseling, et cetera, in regards to sex addiction, do you still see it as unfortunate? Because you mentioned
no,
when you were describing it.
I definitely do not.
That it was a consensual experience where you had an opportunity to explore and see what felt good.
Exactly. And I don't think enough people are given that opportunity.
And
in private, let alone public.
Mm-hmm.
You also said something that interested me, where you talked about that people being okay with it, but also being okay with being okay with it. And I think that's a big piece, because I think that it is that sort of that sense that this is something that I shouldn't be okay with. Mm-hmm. And people have said to me, well, you're okay, like, you let your partner do this?
Yes.
And I don't let, no. I mean, that's not the way it is.
Mm.
But I think that's sort of that we need special permission for this, right? This is something that isn't really okay. And so you're dabbling in kind of the underbelly here. And so I think that piece about being okay with being okay with it is important too.
I agree. I think if anything, that just backs up the stigma, right? You know, most people are not okay with having sex with one person, right? I think if you were to, for example, put a heterosexual female in a threesome situation, chances are heavier feelings are going to fall one way than another. And I think if you were to, say, do the same thing with a straight male, the feelings would be subjectively the same. And I don't think there's any difference, you know, with a lesbian woman or a gay male, but I think the stigma is there. It just, like, sex one-on-one is relatively not okay. It's admissible, consensual, and fine, but I think there's still a stigma there. And I think to define it further amplifies that stigma to say that, you know, okay, I am a sexually active person, and I accept sex, and I'm happy with the sex that I'm having, but I think the rest of the universe says, mm-hmm. wait a minute, that's not okay. What put you in that situation to say that that's okay? And while the situation is, I said it's okay.
Mm.
And I think that's a good definition, is to say, I'm okay. I'm comfortable. I'm consenting, and I'm willing. And I think as long as those parameters are met, then anything goes.
I'm going to add to that, if that's okay. I think if you're in a partnership with someone, having a conversation about what's okay and what's not okay is important as well.
I agree.
And just, I think communication, and just on so many different levels, is really important. And I'm not saying overanalyzing things, but I do think that there needs to be some conversation. And if something's not okay, but that's all right too.
Totally.
And being able to stop if that's not a comfortable thing. And I do agree that in regards to, I think our world would be a lot happier, healthier place if we had discussions about sexuality and relational as well. And that you can be in love with more than one person at the same time. There's wonderful polyamorous relationships as well as sex. Sex doesn't have to be genital friction. It can be a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Exactly. And it can be fun, and it can be an experiment, and it can be entirely up to you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important. Most people, I don't know. I find sex is generally defined in a duplicitous way. It's defined by you and your partner. And I think if you have more than one partner, then that makes it very complex.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as it's defined by both in a consensual, accepting way,
mm-hmm.
then anything goes. Whether it's three partners or four, I think the same rule applies. And what's really crazy is that I think most people on a singular level find this outrageous. Even if they've had it or want it, I think there's this weird fragment in our mind that says sex is kind of wrong. You know, whether we accept it as wrong or not, I think there's this weird societal view that says sex is adamantly heterosexual, sex is adamantly consensual, which it should be. You know, I do not disagree with that part. But that society sets a bystander for sex.
It does, and it actually has all through history as well. I'm actually, as a side note, reading a book called Sex and Punishment right now, which actually discusses the laws in different societies from the beginning of time, where they've actually got documentation. And I'm still in the early stages. I'm hoping to have the author on at some point, just to discuss just about the different laws that have happened throughout the world in different societies. Everybody from the Egyptians, where at that time incest was a normal accepted thing, whereas generally around the world in many societies it was not considered a healthy thing, but because in Egypt at that particular time there wasn't a lot of people within with just in terms of in that space where they were, so it's just really interesting, and it was definitely so far has been a really interesting read. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Because I think heterosexual and homosexual is very different. And the connotation for group sex is also very different. Because generally most heterosexuals do not even get the opportunity to have group sex. Where in a homosexual atmosphere, it may not be more open,
mm-hmm.
but it is more likely. And I think that has something to do with A, the acceptance of oneself, B, the acceptance of one's sexuality, and C, society's acceptance of that sexuality. So, just to briefly summarize, heterosexuality is what it is, right? It's been defined since who knows when, and it's defined generally as a monogamous male-female relationship. Homosexuality has been open as male on male, never defined as one partner or another. And again, this is a stigma, right? This is generally wrong. And I do not advocate group sex in a homosexual atmosphere, but I'm saying that it's widely more accepted because of the lack of societal view that perhaps contains it or accepts it. And I think that's very interesting and very strange. Just the variation on heterosexual to homosexual.
Hmm.
And I don't think that's something that's generally discussed. And I just thought that I should share my view on that.
No, thank you.
Because probably no one else will. And I thank you for your time and your interest. And again, I appreciate your viewpoints and your show in general. I really do think that sex is stigmatized not really by society, but by the individual. But society is what gives us the stigma. And I think as long as we're okay,
mm-hmm.
sex is okay.
Thank you, Patrick.
And I, again, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful night.
You too.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. And that was really nice to have a caller on the show as well. And Ms. Scarlett, eh? I was wondering if you wanted to add any last thoughts before we wrap up the show tonight.
No, just remember to bring play into your relationships and get, you know, get back to remembering why you were together in the first place.
And I think play, you can have a lot of fun regardless of your sexuality. And if anybody is concerned or wants to find out more, there's a wonderful book that I love called The Ethical Slut, which has some great, great, great stuff. So whether or not you're engaging in group sex, multiple partners, etc., in terms of knowing what's okay for you, and I'm using Patrick's terminology there, for that, what's okay, and being able to share that with somebody else so that they know what's okay, and having those wonderful conversations. Scarlett, thank you so much for being on the show.
It's been a pleasure.
Yay! And up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with, and he has the best shoes and some pretty amazing, amazing music as well. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you want to check me out, actually, I'm going to be around on Friday night for a lovely fundraiser and a little bit of sexy dancing as well. The girls, the Stilettoettes, are going to be performing, and very similar. They're probably going to be mad at me for saying this to like a pussycat doll styled show, but at the Barcelona, 25% of the proceeds from the $15 ticket are going to Beauty Night Society, which works with women and children living in poverty in Vancouver's downtown east side. So I will be there on Friday night at Barcelona. If you want to come meet me in person, that would be great. And I hope, regardless whatever you do in terms of your sexuality, I hope you love yourself, take care of yourself, and be open and honest with your partners that you choose to share your body and share your experiences with, and make sure you're happy, healthy, and whole. Take care, everybody, and have a beautiful night. Good night, everyone.